Welcome to the South Harbor Church Podcast. South Harbor is a part of the Harbor Churches, which exists to help people find their way back to God. This week, Pastor Tim begins a new series entitled, I Have a Name, with a message called, Look at Me. Be sure to stick around after the sermon for more information about how you can become more connected to the community here at South Harbor. And now, here's Pastor Tim.
If you have a Bible, we're going to be in Luke chapter 10. We're going to look at this story, and then we're going to look at a story out of the book of John. So if you want to, like, two stories from the life of Jesus. These stories are both incredible. So they're just incredible stories. I love them both. Luke chapter 10, I had a professor in seminary who every class period would begin with this, like, just a slow reading of Luke chapter 10, where we would read it together, and then we would begin the class period. And the reason he did this, it took us a while to kind of figure out why he was doing this, but I believe the reason he was doing this was we tend to think a lot in the church about the words of Jesus, as we should. We tend to think a lot about the works of Jesus and sing a lot about the works of Jesus and the miracles and the resurrection, as we should. But we don't tend to do as much study or reflection on the ways of Jesus. So how Jesus actually lived, the decisions Jesus made, how Jesus engaged with the issues of his world. And so we would begin with this passage as a way of kind of centering ourselves, realizing that it's really important that we think together about how it is we're to be Christians in this world. We study the words, we thank God for the works, and yet we try to model the ways. And so I want to read, we're starting a 3-week series, and each week we're going to anchor ourselves in this passage, but let me just read it with you. There is just enough, so the story itself is Jesus sending out 72 disciples into the world, and he gives them some instructions, and the instructions are just enough odd and weird that there has to be more going on here, which of course there is. Let me read you Luke 10, verse 1. After this, the Lord appointed 72 others and sent them two by two ahead of him to every town and place where he was about to go. He told them, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field. Go, I am sending you out like lambs among wolves." Now notice there, just briefly, we'll get here someday. But he says, ask the Lord of the harvest. And then the very next sentence he says, go. It's almost like the assumption is, as you ask, you'll realize, oh, wait, I'm supposed to be the one that goes. So ask, and then the very next sentence is, go. Verse 4, do not take a purse or bag or sandals, and do not greet anyone on the road. When you enter a house, for say, peace to this house, if someone who promotes peace is there, your peace will rest on them. If not, it will return to you. Stay there, eating and drinking whatever they give you, for the worker deserves his wages. Do not move around from house to house. The story continues, but now, on the one hand, you see it's kind of a straightforward, like Jesus sending them out, gives them some basic instructions. On the one hand, it's very straightforward. On the other hand, it's really, there's just enough weirdness. Like Jesus says, take no purse, take no money, take no change of clothes, take no shoes. Why no shoes? We just had a meeting with a group who's going to Israel, and we talked about the kinds of shoes you should wear in Israel, because Israel's covered with rocks. Why no shoes, Jesus? I mean, why do they have to, like, walk around from village to village without shoes? Why no shoes? Why would Jesus say no shoes? Then he goes and he says, when you go into a house, pronounce peace upon the house. And if the person is a person of peace, your peace will rest on it. If not, it will return to you. That's kind of weird, right? Like, is peace a thing? Is it like something I have that I get to give to you, and then if you don't want it, I take my peace back? What is going on in this story? There's just enough weirdness that makes it really, really interesting. And I would say this story and the instructions Jesus gives in this moment are subtly brilliant and probably more needed in our world today than ever. Don't take my word for it. A couple years ago, a couple of different organizations all ran similar studies all around the same time. So there was an organization known as the Gallup Research Organization. You've heard of Gallup polls. The Pew Research Organization did their own polling. And then the Barna Organization did their polling. And one of the questions they were asking in their poll is, especially to was the question around like faith, and does faith matter to you, and do you attend church? That was one of the questions. And what they noticed was a disproportionate number of the millennial generation. So those of you who were born 1980 or after, so you're millennials. Now some of you are thinking like, I am not a millennial. Such a millennial thing to say. I'm part of that generation too. So the millennial generation, they realized was a lot of the millennial generation was saying, we're not going to church anymore, even if they were raised in the church. And so the question then became, well, why? And the follow-up studies were, why? There was a book that came out a few years ago, pulling these studies together. It's called You Lost Me by David Kinnaman. Super interesting. A little bit dated now, but still really interesting. He said, or in the studies, he discovered that the number one reason that younger people were leaving the church had, Kyle, you'll love this stuff, had nothing to do with like the social positions of the church. So that ranked on the list, but it wasn't really that high. So issues around stances on things like abortion or sexual identity, things like that, the controversial subjects, not that high on the list. The theology or the belief system. So you might think like, oh, they're leaving because they don't believe it anymore. No, that actually didn't really rank on the polls either. Like there's no reason to suggest that the millennial generation doesn't believe the things that the church believes. The reason, according to the polls, that the younger generations are leaving the church is they find the church, sermons, music, the church, irrelevant. The sermons don't apply to my life. The music doesn't really speak to the things I'm struggling with or going through. But beyond that, one of the things they noticed was when it comes to the big issues in the world, when we look for who's going to step in and who's going to take care of these things, the church is not usually one of the people that we're looking for. We look to celebrities to do some kind of a concert to raise money. We look to politicians. We look to the media to start talking about these things. But we don't really look to the church. So an entire generation is saying, yeah, the church is fine, but I don't see why I need to go. It's really just not really relevant to the world I live in. Is the church, is this irrelevant? That's the question. Are we irrelevant? Is the church irrelevant? Now, you know my answer. I believe no, of course not. I love the church. But I do think we should pay attention to some of the things that that the generation is saying. In fact, we work really hard as a church community. You work really hard. We work really hard to make sure that our community is relevant in our world. I think it was a pastor where I first heard it years ago. A pastor raised the question. You've probably heard this question before. If your church were plucked from your neighborhood, would your neighborhood miss it? Would your neighborhood lament if your church was removed from the neighborhood? And we take that question really seriously. Like, are we good news to our neighborhood? Are we good news? I mean, I love Susan. Susan's ministry. Are we good news to young women who decide to keep the baby and to not abort the baby when all the shame might come back to them? Like, are we good news to that mom? We take that really seriously. But beyond that, and that's usually where we stop asking the question, but beyond that, we think as a community that the church has, the local American church, South Harbor Church, Harbor Churches, has a responsibility that's global, not just this community and Byron Center, Wyoming, Granville, Hudsonville, not just this community, but we believe that that God has placed us here with what we have for global impact. Now, when it comes to what's our responsibility to the globe, there tends to be two camps that form as soon as you start asking about what's your responsibility to the globe. Camp number one, mission trips. Service projects. Camp number one is we're going to take a group of people and we are going to load those people up. We're going to try to find some great builders. We're going to try to find some medical people. Some of you who like have great medical skills, maybe an electrician and a plumber, basically every skill set except for pastor. Like I go down and just preach. No, but every other skill set, we're going to take you. We're going to bring you down to a place in need. And your job in this place in need is to give your skills or your gifts in this location. So you're going to build a house. You're going to plumb that house, you're going to run a medical clinic. Great stuff, right? That's camp number one. That's kind of how we think about global mission. Camp number two is, and I hear this a lot, it's increasing. Camp number two is why it costs like $2,500 to go down to Ethiopia, where our partnership is with Compassion. Why would we spend all that money to send me down when I could just write a check and we could give $2,500 that goes right into the community? That's camp number two. We just send the money. Like the it's not that we don't love the people. It's not a cop out, but can't we just send the money? Now, camp number one, mission group camp, will often say, well, camp number two, you just want to cut the check. You don't want to do the work. Camp number two will often say, yes, but you're going to go down. And the danger of you is you might go down and I'll never forget. I went on a mission trip in Guatemala and one of the local builders said to me, you guys realize you put me out of work when you come down here. So camp number, they'll say, well, what about that? So here's what I want to think about. Number one, we have the story of Jesus sending out the 72 disciples. Number two, is the church irrelevant? And then number three, how are we supposed to show up to the problems in our world? Not just our communities, but in our world. Now, with those three in mind, turn to me to John chapter 9. We're going to take a little time here. I love this story. So we're going to take a little bit of time here. John chapter 9, it's a story about Jesus' encounter with a man who's been born blind. And this guy, by the way, is awesome. So just brace yourself. If you don't know this story, this guy is awesome. John chapter 9. How y'all doing? It's like a full room today. This is great. All right. By the way, you'll notice the discipline in not talking about the Detroit Lions. I've been really working hard on it. Okay, John chapter 9, verse 1. As Jesus went along, he saw a man blind from birth. Now that word saw there, Jesus saw a blind man. The word there is the Greek word hareo, hareo. Let me hear you say hareo. Nailed it. Hareo means to see, like to see with the eyes, but it has a deeper meaning. It's not just to see, but it's to stop and to observe for a while. It's not a passing glance. The four meanings. Hareo means to see with the eyes, but it's a deeper kind of seeing. Number two, it's to see with the mind or to perceive or to know. Number three is it's to become acquainted by experience. To experience someone. And then number four is to see or to care for or to take heed of. So Jesus is passing and he sees a man who's been blind since birth and this man is begging. And what John lets us know is Jesus sees him. Now this is, and it's not just a passing glance, oh yeah, that guy. It's not just the homeless man's walking up to my car, don't make eye contact. No, he sees him. Now, this is a big detail because what you'll discover is no one else does. Everyone else sees something about this guy, but nobody else sees this man. Let's continue. Verse 2. Jesus' disciples asked him, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents? That he was born blind. So verse 1, Jesus sees the man. Verse 2, the disciples see the man's blindness. The disciples see a type. He's a type of guy. He's got a disability. So the question is, why is the disability here? Did he mess it up or did his parents, and is this a punishment on his parents? Who messed up, Jesus? Who sinned, this guy or his parents? Jesus sees a man, they see a disability, they see a theological debate. Like, what's going on here? Now, Jesus responds, neither this man nor his parents sinned, said Jesus, but this happened so that the works of God might be displayed in him. This happened so that the works of God might be displayed in him. Now, we'll get back to the story. Let me go on a brief tangent here. I worked really hard to not go on this tangent, but I just think it's really important that we go here. A couple years ago, we spent an entire Sunday just on this one line, because I think that this might be top five. You could probably convince me this is the number one worst translation in the Bible. Original Greek New Testament is written in original New Testament is written in Greek. It just translated into English. Now, in the translation, you have this passage where it says, "But this happened. Neither this man or his parents sinned. But this happened so that the works of God might be displayed in him." Now, just at the cuff, it would seem as though Jesus is saying to his disciples, "God made this man blind for this moment. God made this man blind so that someday I could walk through this village and everyone would see that I have this power, that I am the Son of God. So all of this pain, your job is, it's like just endure the pain because this is all here to show that God can make great things happen." Now, a couple problems with just that. First is it doesn't work out like that. If you read the story, this doesn't make Jesus more famous. In fact, they want to kill him as a response. That's just an observation. The other, though, is this is, for me, deeply theologically problematic. First off, this is the only time in the scriptures that you'll ever see Jesus giving somebody a disease so that he can heal them. He never is going around giving people diseases so that he can prove he's powerful. Like, that just doesn't happen. Jesus stands up against demonic possession. That happens. Jesus curses the natural disasters, which are, that happens. Jesus, the people are born a certain way. That happens. But there's never, like, Jesus giving somebody a problem so that he can heal them from that problem. So what's going on in the passage? Well, if you go to the original Greek, which you all do. No. Okay, if you go to the original Greek, because this one's problematic, so I have to. You go to the original Greek, and then you just do a little digging on the original Greek. This line, who sinned? Jesus responds, neither this man nor his parents sinned. That's in the original Greek. I walked you through it word for word last time, but we don't have time to do that. That's in the original Greek. However, the this happened so that isn't. So the story is, who sinned? This man or his parents? Jesus says, neither. And then the word so that is often translated let. Let God be glorified. Now the translator said, well, that doesn't make any sense. Like, he's not answering the question. I don't understand why they would say it. So they add the this happened so that. But for me, it makes total sense that Jesus would say, you're asking the wrong question. Neither this man nor his parents. This is not about his sin. Let God be glorified. And then he heals the man. You see? Does God give you the cancer so he can prove he's bigger than the cancer? Does God give you the... Or is what the early disciples said, that there's an actual war against a spirit on the spiritual realm going on in the world. And Jesus, the enemy has come to steal, kill, and destroy, Jesus says, but I have come that they may have life and life to the full. Is there actually a battle? Okay. Sorry for the tangent. Interesting a little bit? Okay. Verse 4. Jim, I ran a code with him. Every time I'm going to cough, I'm going to do this. You don't want me to do that into the microphone. Okay. I got sanitizer here. Don't worry. We're good. As long as it is day, we must do the works of him who sent me. Night is coming when no one can work. While I'm in the world, I am the light of the world. After saying this, he spit on the ground, made some mud with the saliva, and put it on the man's eyes. How long do you have to spit until you make mud? I don't know. Go, he told them, wash in the pool of Siloam. This word means sent. So the man went and washed and came home seeing. Now, you're thinking, what's the deal with the spitting thing? Great question. We don't have time to look into it. If you're interested in that kind of stuff, here's your Google search. And just like go deep into it. I want you to look up the Roman god Asclepius. 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 And then there's an Egyptian made-up god as a political god that they're like, we need to merge all the religions. So they created a god named Serapis about 150 years before Jesus. Serapis. And then look up the Roman general Vespasian and then type in spit. That'd be fun. And then let's have coffee and we'll talk about it. Okay, verse 8. His neighbors and those who had formerly seen him begging asked, isn't this the same man who used to sit and beg? Some claimed that he was. Others said, no, he only looks like him. But he himself insisted, I'm the man. I am the man. Which, by the way, how great is that line? Hey, you're talking about me. I'm right here. I'm the guy. I am the guy. Now, the word that is used to kick off the story when it says Jesus sees is the word horeo. Jesus sees the man. Jesus sees his pain, his suffering. He sees what he's gone through. Jesus sees him. But here we read that the neighbors who had formerly seen him begging. Now, the word for seen him begging there is not horeo. It's a different word. It's theoreo. Let me hear you say theoreo. Theoreo. Remember Theo Huxtable? Another sermon. Theoreo does not mean to see deeply. Theoreo means to be a spectator, to stand at a distance. They've got a question. They said, hang on, is this the guy, this guy that was blind but now see, is it the same guy we saw begging? And they're not sure. Now, this man's been, first detail we're given about him is he was born this way. He's been blind since birth. He's been begging a while. How many times did they walk by this guy and not really look at him? He's a type. He's a category of people. He's another beggar. He's another, somebody sinned. He's another victim of somebody's sin, whether it's his own or his parents. But how many times have they walked by and they didn't actually see him. Are we sure it's the same guy? I don't know. I think he just looks like him. He's just like him. Okay. Verse 9. But he himself insisted, I am the man. How then were your eyes opened? They asked. He replied, the man they call Jesus made some mud and put it on my eyes. He told me to go to Siloam and wash. So I went and washed, and then I could see. Makes sense, right? I think this is where we get the phrase clear as mud. Like, it's like, I'll explain what happened. It's weird, but if you want to know what happened, he spit in mud, rubbed it in my eyes, said, go wash, and then I could see. Where is this man? They asked him. I don't know, he said. They brought to the Pharisees the man who had been blind. Now, to the Pharisees, so the religious leaders. Now, the day on which Jesus had made the mud and opened the man's eyes was a Sabbath. There are all these laws in the Old Testament about honor the Sabbath. Don't work on the Sabbath. Therefore, the Pharisees also, so the question, by the way, is spitting work? This is the stuff that matters to some. Okay, to the Pharisees, that mattered. Therefore, the Pharisees also asked him how he received his sight. He put mud on my eyes, the man replied, and I washed, and now I see. It's like, I've already said this. Some of the Pharisees said, this man is not from God, for he does not keep the Sabbath. But others asked, how can a sinner perform such signs? So the religious leaders were divided. I know that's hard to understand, that religious leaders would be divided, but I know, back in the day. The disciples see the man, and they see a theology question, a debate. Who sinned, this guy or this guy? The religious leaders see the man, and they have a series of questions. They see religious laws. It's a political conversation. They see the man, and now this man represents a whole political dialogue about what is the Sabbath, what's good work on the Sabbath. They don't see the man. They see this idea that's kind of consumed. It's one of the eight great debates of the day, a political debate. Jesus is the only one who sees him. Verse 17. Then they turned again to the blind man. Blind man, what have you to say about him? It was your eyes he opened. The man replied, well, if you're asking me, he's a prophet. They still did not believe that he had been blind and had received his sight until they sent for the man's parents. Is this your son? They asked. Is this the one you say was born blind? How is it that he can now see? We know he's our son, the parents answered. And we know he was born blind, but how he can now see or who opened his eyes, we don't know. Ask him. He's of age. He will speak for himself. His parents said this because they were afraid of the Jewish leaders who already had decided that anyone who acknowledged that Jesus was the Messiah would be put out of the synagogue. By the way, if you are afraid to talk about your child because of religious leaders and how they will respond to you, then there's a religious problem there. That was why his parents said, he's of age, ask him. The second time, they summoned the man who had been blind. Give glory to God by telling the truth, they said. We know this man is a sinner. He replied, whether he is a sinner or not, I don't know. One thing I do know, I was blind, but now I see. I love that response, by the way. There's like a whole series of sermons in that response. Because what I think often happens is you find yourself, you've had an encounter with Jesus. Jesus has changed your life. You kicked an addiction. You found hope after the loss of a job. You found hope on the other side of loneliness. Whatever it is, Jesus was very real to you. And all of a sudden you start telling people, like, I'm a follower of Jesus. I choose Jesus. And then people have questions for you immediately, especially like the cynics, the skeptics. And the questions are often like questions that, how old is the earth? I love it. This guy's like, I don't know. I wasn't there. I don't know. How did they get all those animals in that boat? That's not that big of a boat. I've been to Kentucky. How did they get all those animals in the boat? What about the trees? How did they get the bushes in the boat? What I love about this guy's response is he simply says, I don't know. I don't. God is God. I don't know. Why did he spit in mud? I don't know. It's okay to say, I don't know. Here's what I do know. I was this way, and then Jesus came, and now I'm this way. I was blind, and then I met Jesus, and now I can see, and every day I see a little better. I love that Jesus gives us the permission just to simply say, I don't know. I love that this guy has the chutzpah to say, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know whether he's a prophet. I think he is. You want my opinion? He's a prophet. Is he? Can I prove it? I don't know. I just can prove what he did. You can't argue with your story. Anyway, 26. Then they asked him, what did he do to you? What did he, oh no, then they asked him, what did he do to you? How did he open your eyes? He answered, I have told you already and you did not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you want to become his disciples too? I want to be this guy's friend. I do. I want to go get Taco Bell with him. I want to watch old Will Ferrell movies. I want to be his friend. Why? I have told you already and you didn't listen. I told you twice actually, but no one's keeping score. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you want to be his disciple too? I mean, like the chutzpah on this guy. By the way, if you're... You got to imagine he's cooking up some of these lines as he's been begging his whole life. Like, oh yeah, if I ever get my sight back, I'm going to let him have it. Then they hurled insults at him and said, you are this fellow's disciple. We are disciples of Moses. We know that God spoke to Moses, but as for this fellow, we don't even know where he comes from. Don't worry, our new friend doesn't back down that easy. The man answered, now that is remarkable. You don't know where he comes from, yet he opened my eyes. We know that God does not listen to sinners. He listens to the godly person who does his will. Nobody has ever heard of opening the eyes of a man born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. By the way, this is called logic. Logic. What you've discovered is what this guy's about to discover is that when you're in an intense debate, an argument, logic is out the window. No matter how much logic he brings to these religious leaders, they're not going to hear the logic. I have a friend who will often say, you cannot reason with emotion. You cannot reason with emotion. He goes on. He says, to this they replied, so he gives his logical, like, hey, I was blind, now I see. Like, that should be enough. To this they replied, you were steeped in sin at birth. How dare you lecture us? And they threw him out. Which, by the way, do you remember how this story started? The disciples asked, who sinned? This guy or his parents? This whole encounter happens. This whole dialogue. Three times they come. They pull the guy's parents in. They have this whole dialogue. And yet the dialogue ends at the very same spot that it started. There will always be Pharisees. There will always be people that no matter how much evidence or proof or people or stories or like you pull in, no matter how much you show them what God has done in your life and in the life of others, they are choosing to not see. They'll choose to only see the type. Oh yeah, this is just a theological debate. 35, Jesus heard that they had thrown him out. When he found him, let me pause. It's not just a cliche. When we say Jesus seeks after those who are thrown out, Jesus seeks after those who are discarded, this man gets thrown out. Jesus, we read, when they had thrown him out, and when he had found him, he said, do you believe in the Son of Man? Jesus finds him. Do you believe in the Son of Man? Jesus has seen the man. Nobody else has seen him. He's horeoed the man. He's seen him deeply. He's seen the man. Jesus heals the man who is blind. That's a big miracle. But I would dare wager it's not the biggest thing that happens in the story. The biggest thing that happens in the story is not that Jesus can heal the blind man. Jesus can do that in his sleep, right? Jesus can do lots of things in his sleep. We've already seen that. Jesus healing a blind man is not... It's a big miracle. We should pay attention. It's not the biggest miracle here. The biggest miracle here is what Jesus reveals to us about who God is. The biggest miracle is not that Jesus can make a blind man see. The biggest miracle is that Jesus sees. Our God sees. He doesn't turn a blind eye. He sees. He sees the need. He sees us in our most vulnerable spot. And he doesn't put us in a category. Jesus doesn't see a beggar, a type of person, a blind person. Jesus sees a person. A person who, no matter what happens, nobody else chooses to see him. Verse 36. He says, do you see me? Oh, you missed it. Who is he, sir? The man asked. I'm so sorry for that. The man asked, tell me so that I may believe in him. Jesus said, you have now seen him. In fact, he is the one speaking to you. So Jesus uses, by the way, the same word. You have now horeoed him. You've seen me. Then the man said, Lord. So now that you've seen who I truly am, who am I? The man said, Lord, I believe. And he worshiped him. This story is about seeing. seeing matters to Jesus. At one point in a very particularly fiery speech, Jesus, Matthew records this really fiery speech. Jesus talks about people who look but don't see. Let me just read you the Cliff Note version. They say, "Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go to visit you?" Jesus, the king, will reply, "Truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did it for me." Seeing matters to Jesus. This is why we do what we do at Harbor Churches. This is why we believe that it is really important that we don't just send money. Often money is needed. We've been blessed. But it's not just about sending money. We send people. We send people to places like Ethiopia, to Uganda, to Nicaragua. I was laughing that, remember the video from a couple weeks ago with Ben in the water in Nicaragua? We all gave him a hard time because he's at a water park. I was going to say watering hole. I'm not from, like, what? He was at a water park in Nicaragua. I'm like, you know how much feces you were swimming in, Ben? But he did it because he loved it. Like, it matters to send people. It matters that we send people, that people to actually, imagine that we send people in our local community to Brown Elementary, to the high school. Like, it's really important that we, as Christians, aren't just going to build things, but we are going to build relationships. It really matters that we see. There are the words of Jesus. There are the works of Jesus, the curing of miracles. But then there's the way of Jesus. And the way of Jesus always, 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 always begins with Jesus seeing. Here's why this one matters. This one's been, this particular story has been on my mind a lot this last week and kind of how to present it. I'll give you the flyby. On Thursday, we had a birthday party. Some of you were able to, who showed up to the birthday party? Yeah, we turned 9. 9's a big day. So thank you for, and a lot of you served. So we had a birthday party and, I showed up a little late. I was in the office area and the reason was because my good friend Tanner Smith at 3:58, I looked up the timestamp, sent me an email. And the email was 12 pictures of kids who live on the border of Turkey and Syria. And I had to collect myself. Let me back up. A couple of weeks ago, my son's 5. So I've got a 5, a 3, and a 1. And my 5-year-old's in his school, they had a lockdown drill. This five-year-old little boy and his whole class, by the way, teachers, I don't know how you do this. Police officers, I know you, these kids had to go to the bathroom and had to pretend as though they weren't present. And they had to figure out where to run and hide in case there was an active shooter in the school. And so they had a lockdown drill. And I'd gotten an email. I forgot about it. And so I'm walking over to pick him up, and I'm walking home, and my 5-year-old son looks at me, and he says, "Daddy, is someone going to, so would someone come hurt me?" Again, teachers, I don't know, especially teachers of little ones, how do you do this? I know that you've got to, like, do this and do it in a soft way. Something in me, because parents, like, you want to protect the innocence in your kid as long as possible, right? Like, you don't want someone to just come and rub a black, like, you don't want to steal the innocence from their eyes, rub a smudge over it. I don't know if you've been following the news. Here's what happened. On the border of Turkey and Syria, we've got a presence there, actually, as a church. But on the border, let me give you the rundown. Earlier this week, I believe it was Monday, a tweet went out. And in 24 hours, our military presence removed themselves from a war zone, a stable war zone. Do we have a map? Oh, I think the map was the black picture. That's what it was. Doesn't matter. And 24 hours later, this was happening in the area. And here's the thing. It was in the news for a minute, and then it wasn't in the news because, I don't know. Now, the group of people that live in this area are a group of people known as the Kurds. Those are some Kurds. Hang on one second, Amy. The Kurds live in this area. I don't know if you pay attention to the news. The Kurds are like a people without a nation. So They should hit a soft spot with us because the biblical story is often a group of people who have no nation. They have a nation for a moment, and then they're always occupied. And so the Kurds are very similar. They were the ones who were one of the dominant forces that were with us in fighting ISIS. A year ago or so, we celebrated together that this region has become stabilized, and it was stabilized. We had defeated ISIS in this region, or had stabilized ISIS in this region. And the reason this matters at a very personal level is many of you have become friends with Steve Gumer. He was here a couple weeks, you know, Steve. That whole relationship is just weird. Bob Carroll, Bob, where are you? I saw you back somewhere. Anyway, good friend, Bob goes here. Bob introduced us over Wink Chicken Wings back in the day. And so we got to know each other, and then this whole relationship developed between us and Partners. He's the president and founder of Partners Relief and Development. And he has worked to bring, the early efforts was a relief effort. How do we keep the people fed, warm, clothes, blankets, relief effort? Then when we celebrated that things were stable, we moved into development work. And as a church, you all, whether you're aware of it or not, we built two clinics. They have six of them. We built two of them. And we built two schools. That's the picture you were looking at, one of the schools. We built two schools in the region. And there's videos of kids singing songs, Christian. I mean, it's just beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. And then overnight, the bombs happen. This is a screenshot from a video. We believe, at least it's being reported, that, never mind, just you can look it up. So Tanner Smith works for Partners Relief and Development. Tanner sent me on Thursday afternoon some pictures of the kids. He was just down to this region, and he sent me some pictures of the kids that were in the region. And let me just show you some of these kids. Look. I get that it's complex. I don't pretend to know the politics of the whole thing. 100,000 right now are displaced. Here's what I was thinking about this, the lockdown drill with my own son. If you're this little girl's daddy, how do you explain it to her? Is the church irrelevant? We can study the words of Jesus, and we can believe in the works of Jesus, but if we choose to not see, I would say that we have become irrelevant. Here's the good news. Because we're good news people, right? The gospel means good news. Jesus came to bring good. Here's the good news. Jesus hasn't left the area. So I don't know if you've been paying attention. If you've been watching the news again, you got to look. Unfortunately, our news isn't news. It's entertainment. You guys, we realize this, right? It's not news. All of them are guilty. It's not news. It's entertainment. It's just to keep us watching. Steve was all over the news. Why was Steve, a guy from, the ministry's run out of Ada, Michigan. Why was Steve all over the news? You know why? Because no one else is there except for Partners Relief and Development. They're the only ones there right now. No one else is there. Most of the footage you see is coming out of, it's their people filming it on their phones. No one else is there. The major, nonprofit organizations can't. They're not in the region. The media, they don't want anything to do with it. So they'll take secondhand footage, but they don't want anything. So why is Steve on Fox News and CNN? Why is he? It's always the kids who suffer, right? Let me read you an email that Steve sent. Let me find it real quick. It said urgent in all caps as a subject. And he said, Tim, my heart is so heavy today as I read urgent text from our Syria. This is on Wednesday. From our team in Syria telling us that relentless attacks on civilians have begun, and as I see images of Raqqa burning. 3 months ago, our team witnessed Kurds and Syrians coming together in order to refurbish, repair, and reopen a middle school east of Raqqa. They invited us to join them in celebrating the reopening of a school shuttered for 5 long years under ISIS occupation. In a nearly perfect picture of unity, these two groups, with 531 students and their parents, danced and sang in joy. Yesterday, ISIS suicide bombers once again began to target the good people of Raqqa. Today, as I'm sure you have seen, Turkish forces have begun dropping bombs on the very communities we have walked alongside over the past 5 years. For me, the complex politics at play in this escalating conflict are irrelevant. What I and my team care about are the children who will once again be traumatized and suffer because the adults are fighting. The good news is, when this thing happens, it's always Christians who run in. We get a lot of bad press. We do a lot of really dumb things as Christians often. We often get in the wrong fights way too often. But when it matters, it's always been Christians who run in. And let me tell you another story. Where are we at in time? Okay, let me tell you another story. I heard this story recently. It comes from the same mission organization. So Partners Relief and Development does work on the border of Syria. So they've been doing relief and development work there. But they've also been in the largest genocide, maybe the largest genocide in world history, the genocide of the Rohingya people, which is happening in Myanmar. And so they've been providing relief efforts, blankets, clothes, things like that in Myanmar. And it's a whole group of people that are just being displaced there too. Through this, Partners Relief and Development met a couple. Let me show you a picture. This is Arthur and Clasper. I was told by Tanner, because Tanner just met them. And so he's like, I was told that Arthur is like the most quiet, stoic man like ever. He's like, he just kind of sits there quiet. You would not guess that he's a superhero. Like legitimately, superhero. He has begun in this refugee camp, church. He's a pastor. It's his calling. Even though he's a refugee, he's not stopped being called. And so he started a church without any resources, but he started a church. And in that church, they trained up and have begun a medical clinic that they run in the slums of a refugee camp. But I want you to hear a story. This comes out of Steve. Again, Steve is many of your friends. He's your friend. This is Steve telling a story of something not
me. Story. When I first met your dad, he found out about a village that was attacked. The survivors from the village went into a cave, and the Myanmar army believed that they wouldn't go out the other end of the cave. A river ran through the cave. They wouldn't go out the other end because it's all landmines on the other end. There were landmines placed there. So they decided to wait until the villagers would come out, and then they would just shoot them as they came out. So somehow they got a message to Arthur that they're trapped in this cave, and there's this minefield on the only exit. And then the Burma army, and so they're there for some days, and alone, Arthur goes and prays and ask God to help him get through the minefield.
Oh, my gosh.
Crazy, like, you're going to get killed. And so Arthur did it. He walked through this minefield and memorized where he went from the Thai border all the way to that cave. And then he led, I think it was like 90 people out of that cave back to the Thai border. And then he called me. I think it was like 2003 or so, 2003. There was a lot of fighting with DKBA at that time and also Burma Army. And he called me and he says, Steve, we have 90 people who need blanket and food and shelter and basic things. And it was one of the early times in Partners when we emptied the bank account and bought the things that those villagers need to get them established. And I think a lot of them ended up living here in Mela Camp.
Isn't that an incredible story? He memorized the route, leads a group of people. This is who the church has always been when we're at our best. We are a group of people who choose to hareo, to actually see. Jesus says, the harvest is plentiful, the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest to send workers into the field. Go, I am sending you out like lambs among wolves. Ask and then go. What stands in the middle of these two? We have to see. We choose to see not types of people, not issues, we see people. Quick P.S. Luke 10 comes after Luke 9. Say duh. Okay. Luke 10 comes after Luke 9. Here's why this matters. Luke 9 tells a story, if you look it up, the story of Jesus sending out the 12. Luke 10 is the story of Jesus sending out the 72. Why two stories that are very, very similar, almost identical, but why the numbers? Why are the numbers that were given? Now, what almost every scholar will agree on is that the 12 disciples of Jesus represent Israel. Way back at the beginning, Genesis, God establishes Israel, and in Israel, there are 12 tribes in Israel. So Jesus sends out the 12, and the message is pretty clear. Jesus is the Messiah, the good news for all of Israel. Why 72? That's in Luke 9. Luke 10, Jesus sends out the 72. Why the 72? Again, almost everyone agrees that the reason for the 72 is because in Genesis 10, there is a list of nations. It's a census of sorts. There's a list of nations. In the list of nations, 72 nations are mentioned. 72. What's the message? Jesus is good news for all of Israel, but it's not just for all of Israel. Because of who Jesus is good news for everyone. Now, something happens in between Luke 9 and Luke 10. Luke 9, the sending of the 12. Luke 10, the sending of the 72. Something happens in between those two. If you look up the story, twice Jesus says to his followers, they're going to kill me. Twice. Twice he says, they're going to kill me. And by the way, if you follow me, they're going to kill you. So between the sendings, there's this very clear, this is how this is going to play out. Why is it important to see? Why does he send them out the way he sends them out? Why does Jesus need them to take nothing? Don't just take stuff. I need you to see them. Don't stop anywhere on your way. Don't jump from house to house. Stay put. See them. Why does seeing matter to Jesus? Why do we do what we do when we do mission work? Why do we do it? If you just send skills, we're going to build a house. At some point, your body starts to break down and your skills are not helpful. Just true, right? At some point, you can't do the physical work. So if it's just about you doing the physical work, at some point you're irrelevant in the mission field. If it's just about money, if it's just about sending money, and money often matters. In fact, I think you should give to Partners Relief and Development. Money matters. But if it's just about money, then when the money dries up, we probably can't give to that organization anymore. Why does Jesus need us to see them? Because in going, we may lose it all. And the only thing that'll keep us connected is if we see them. It's why you would give all your money for your children because you see your kids. It's why you would give all your energy, even if your body is breaking down, to your family because you see your family. Jesus wants us to see the whole world this way, especially the least among us. Let me end with, this is a Franciscan benediction. May God bless you with a restless discomfort about easy answers, half-truths, and superficial relationships, so that you may seek truth boldly and love deep within your heart. May God bless you with holy anger at injustice, oppressions, and exploitation of people, so that you may tirelessly work for justice, freedom, and peace among all people. May God bless you with the gift of tears to shed with those who suffer from pain, rejection, starvation, or the loss of all that they cherish, so that you may reach out your hand to comfort them and transform their pain into joy. May God bless you with enough foolishness to believe that you really can make a difference in this world, so that you are able with God's grace to do what others claim cannot be done. And the blessing of God, the supreme majesty and our creator, Jesus Christ, the incarnate word, who is our brother and savior, and the Holy Spirit, our advocate and our guide, be with you and remain with you this day and forevermore. Amen. Would you pray with me? Gracious Lord, Lord, help us to see. First, we ask that of ourselves. Lord, help us to see. Help us to see. Help us to observe. Help us to see deeply. Lord, help us as we train those around us, especially if we have children. Lord, help us to teach them to see that the cashier who checks out their groceries isn't a machine. It's a person. The person taking their order is not a machine. They're a person. Lord, help us to teach them to see. And Lord, when it comes to the big needs in our world, especially what's happening right now, Lord, when it comes to the big needs, we know it's uncomfortable. Would you give us the courage to keep our eyes open? Help us to see. Jesus, we want to know your words. We want to know your works. But Lord, we desperately need to follow your ways. Would you give us the courage to do so? We pray. We pray this in your name. Amen. Would you please stand here?
Well, thanks for listening today. If you're interested more in the work that Partners is doing in conflict zones around the world, please visit them on the web at www.partners.ngo. As always, if you're looking for more information about South Harbor and our community here, you can find us on the web at www.southharbor.org. Or connect with us on Facebook and Instagram at South Harbor Church. We also hold our Sunday services at 9 and 11 a.m. We'd love to see you there. Until next time, have a great day.